Our next case this morning is number 042549, Premcor USA Incorporated against American Home Assurance Company. Ms. Alexander.
Good morning. Mary Rose Alexander on behalf of the appellants, Premcor USA and Premcor Refining Group. This insurance coverage case is like putting together the pieces of a jigsaw puzzle. We have an insurance contract, and we have bedrock rules of construction supplied by the Illinois courts. The parties agree that you have all the pieces of the puzzle, and they agree on the rules of construction, but they don't agree on the picture. Premcor has put American Homes policy together three different ways. Each way forms the same picture. Coverage. American Home is required to pay Premcor's defense costs for two personal injury lawsuits.
Could I ask you, Ms. Alexander, this is really just kind of a factual question about the primary policy, the Reliance policy. As I read this policy, Reliance, let's assume hypothetically it had not gone insolvent, was obligated to defend the insured, we'll call them Premcor, whatever the cost was. The cost of defense could have been $1 million, it could have been $10 million, it could have been anything. It's simply a regular old duty to defend, right?
That's correct.
So in the absence of the insolvency, the defense expenses would have been covered in the Reliance policy. Now, you've made a point that defense costs are also covered, or you've said are covered in the American Home umbrella policy, but it looks to me like they are actually covered in both policies. They're there in both policies.
You're correct, Your Honor. Okay. Had Reliance not been insolvent, Reliance would be paying defense costs.
Right.
Reliance is insolvent.
Right. No, with that,
and
which
as
is, of
a result,
course the problem.
As a result, under two different theories, either coverage agreement number one, above the amount recoverable, or coverage agreement number two, for claims not covered, under both of those coverages, American Home must provide the defense costs.
Right,
either way,
the district court had focused a lot on this endorsement number 10, since I think everybody agrees that the term amount recoverable under Illinois law is an ambiguous term, if that's all that there is there in the policy, and ambiguity is resolved in favor of the insured. But that's not the only thing in this policy. First of all, there are a number of places that use the phrase, roughly speaking, whether collectible or not. And then there's, of course, this endorsement number 10, where the word liability, according to you, means the $10 million, and according to them means the amount we have to pay. Right?
That's right. American Home relies almost exclusively on endorsement number 10 to cure the ambiguity of the words amount recoverable. It says that endorsement number 10 is a quote-unquote drop-down exclusion, and it says, as Your Honor notes, that the endorsement unambiguously cures the ambiguity. But the endorsement is not a drop-down exclusion. It doesn't say drop-down anywhere, and it doesn't say exclusion anywhere. To the contrary, it says...
Well, it says shall not be increased. The liability of, basically, American Home shall not be increased by the refusal or inability of the insured to pay the self-insured retention, et cetera, et cetera. Why do you think they were talking... I mean, here it is in page 34 of the short appendix... Why were they talking about insolvency, bankruptcy? What could they mean when that's the context, other than what they're saying?
When read in the context of amount recoverable or insuring agreement number two, what this language means is that American Home will never have to pay more than its $10 million. It has insured PremCorp up to $10 million above the amount recoverable or for amounts not covered in insuring agreement number two. American Home is actually asking this court to decrease its liability. We aren't asking to increase. The whole premise of its theory...
it's not really a decrease either, because once again, if the primary insurance company had not been insolvent, actually American Home wouldn't have had to pay a dime on this, because the defense costs, as you rightly point out, would all have been covered under the primary insurance agreement. This is not an instance, at least so far, I don't know what the status of the appeal in the state courts is, but it's not an instance where there was either a settlement or a jury verdict or the like for liability. So American Home wouldn't have had to pay anything. Now, because Reliance is insolvent, all of a sudden they're looking at paying $2 million. And so they look at endorsement number 10 and they say, $2 million is more than zero. You know, why is our liability now bigger?
2 points. We need to focus just on the American Home policy, for which a $510,000 premium was paid. That policy includes defense costs above the amount recoverable in insuring agreement number two and in the ultimate net loss definition. That policy responds. But second,
but of course, both policies cover defense costs.
Let me respond to that in one other way, Your Honor. The Reliance policy actually does not appear to provide coverage under its own terms. Insuring agreement number two says that when a claim is not covered in the underlying policy, the American Home policy will provide coverage above $25,000 ultimate net loss. We have a difference of opinion as what is meant by not covered, but American Home says it means not covered by the terms of. And on page 2 of the Reliance policy, which is short appendix 11, it says that there is an exclusion for bodily injury to an employee of the insured arising out of and in the course of the employment by the insured.
Now, they argue you didn't raise this point before the district court and you've waived it.
Yes, they do. And let me finish making the point and then I will address the waiver argument. It is clear from the terms of the Reliance policy that these particular claims, which are wrongful death, personal injury accidents for alleged injury on the job, are not covered even by the terms of the Reliance policy. PremCorp policy of the American Home policy has no such exclusion. Therefore, under coverage agreement number two, it must respond. American Home's only argument is that we waived coverage agreement number two below. But a party can't waive an argument. It can only waive a claim. And that's set forth in the case law that we cite in our brief. The case that they cite...
But that's very unfair to the other side. No, I'm not sure that...
The case that they cite, Grayson versus O'Neill, involved a situation in which the party didn't even have a claim in their complaint. We have a claim for coverage under the entire policy. But in addition, Your Honor, American Home argued these points below. On pages 5 and 6 of their opening brief, they addressed not covered. They addressed the Schwinn case.
But they addressed the employee exclusion. That's the key thing. Was that ever called to the attention of the district court?
No, it was not.
All right.
And it's my view that we did not waive the argument. And in addition, under this court's de novo review, you have the discretion to address an argument on appeal for a claim that was raised below when it has been fully briefed in this court, which it has been. As Your Honor has pointed out, you waive the waiver argument by briefing the issue to this court. I believe my time is up.
I want to ask you a question before you go.
Yes.
If I'm not clear on something. In addition to Reliance, there are other underlying insurers.
Excuse me.
And I just don't understand why this isn't a workers' comp claim and why on-the-job injury wouldn't be covered there. And that's one of the underlying things, according to short appendix 27.
Yes, Your Honor. As I understand it, the workers' compensation carrier, this is not in the facts of the case, but there has not been workers' compensation coverage that is applicable here. The exclusion in the Reliance policy is an exclusion that is supposed to carve out workers' compensation claims. But in the record here, as I understand it, there is no workers' compensation coverage for this claim.
Well, that's what I don't understand, because that's what that carve-out is for. And I don't know what this list on short appendix 27 is, but it talks about employee liability. And this is part of which the American Home is an umbrella over. But anyway, I won't take any more of your time.
I'll also note that the insurer is the same Planet Insurance Company, which is Reliance, which is insolvent.
Oh, great.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Alexander. We'll hear now from Mr. Schurz.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Perry Shores. I'm attorney for American Home. I'd like to make two points to kind of put this into context, one factual and one legal. One, the factual has been addressed already in argument, and that's that if PremCorp is asking American Home to pay more than $2 million in defense costs, had Reliance not been insolvent, American Home would have to pay zero.
But here's where I want you to address something. The district court first relied, and you in your brief rely very heavily on endorsement number 10. But I've looked at endorsement number 10 a lot. You know, I have it tabbed here in my brief. And I cannot, simply by reading it, tell whether the word liability, which is the second word, means the overall cap of $10 million shall not be increased, or whether the amount of monies paid shall not be increased. And if it's the first, then it's if it's just the overall cap, you can easily pay $2 million without exceeding $10 million. If it's the difference between zero and $2 million, you know, you wouldn't have paid anything had there not been an insolvency. Now you're going to pay $2 million. Then this seems to work fine. But ambiguous terms in insurance contracts, terms where there are at least two, if not more, reasonable interpretations, are construed in favor of the insured party, which here is PremCorp. So why does this not mean that this policy, however much somebody might have wanted to exclude all incidents of bankruptcy, failed to do the job?
Well, as we addressed in our brief, one reason is the policy already says in the declarations, in the coverage provisions, the limit of liability under this policy is $10 million.
And no one's asking you to pay a nickel more than $10 million. They're asking you to pay $2 million and some.
No, I understand that. And what I'm saying is the policy already says it's $10 million and can't be more than $10 million. To have an endorsement added then that just says we still think that the limit of liability is $10 million even if they're bankrupt has absolutely no meaning whatsoever.
But you know, people often do belt and suspenders sorts of things in insurance policies, though. I don't know why.
Well, the second issue is there's a difference between liability and limit of liability or cap of liability. Clearly, when you talk about a limit of liability, you're saying what is the most liability that you could have? You can have the most liability is $10 million, but you can have a lesser liability. And therefore, liability is anything that you have to pay. It just doesn't make sense to read that word liability as what is your limit of liability.
But the other side of that is that the word liability has kind of a potentiality built into it. If what you had meant is the amount the company will actually pay shall not be increased, I mean, the actual outflow of funds, that's a little bit different from liability. I mean, you are liable for harm that you cause, right? And then somebody sues you and you eventually get the amount fixed and you pay it.
Well,
I don't know. I mean, I'm just saying if this word liability, you're offering your interpretation of it, your opponents also have, but if this word is an ambiguous word, then don't we need to ask what PremCorp was paying for? What was this premium going to?
Well, again, I would disagree that it's an ambiguous term. I agree, obviously, with how Illinois courts construe ambiguities, but this is not an ambiguous term. And I contrary to what the appellants have said this morning, that's not our sole basis. We have to, as the appellant said in their reply brief, you have to look to the context of the policy, not terms in the abstract. And the other important provision in the policy, and I think that both feeds into how you interpret amount recoverable and how you interpret endorsement number 10, is also the ultimate net loss definition, which says our ultimate net loss includes defense costs, but there's an exception. When it's covered by the underlying insurance, then we don't pay defense costs, even if it's not collectible under that underlying insurance. When you put all of these provisions together, there is no ambiguity.
When would you ever pay defense costs then? I can't even imagine a commercial general liability policy that doesn't involve an obligation by the primary insurer to pay defense costs. That's what you're, it's part of what you're doing.
Well, it wouldn't be a question of whether or not there's a defense obligation as a general matter under the underlying policy. The question is there coverage or not under that underlying policy? If there is some kind of provision, exclusion, condition, something else that takes coverage out of the primary policy but doesn't take coverage out of the umbrella policy, then we have a duty to defend above the retained amount, which would be $25,000 in that
mm-hmm.
case.
Mm-hmm.
But in most cases, we're not going to have a duty to defend where there's coverage under the underlying Reliance policy.
In the event that the, let's just say there was liability and there was $4 million in the jury award, the Reliance, if it were still solvent, would pay $2 million. American Home would pay $2 million. Would they then pay proportionate defense costs in that?
No, I don't. I would not agree with that.
I thought I read something that might invite that, and I just wanted to make sure that's not the case.
No, that is not the position. If there were somehow
$2 million in this case already is amazing, to me at least.
I agree.
I had another question on the other side on this the underlying insurance. The workers' comp is just not a factor here, huh?
We didn't obviously really go into that on the waiver issue. There is workers' compensation insurance. My understanding, and I'm really speaking
off
the
cuff. But you're an umbrella over that, right?
Right.
Yeah, because there's a lot of policies that you're an umbrella over besides just Reliance's. And now she tells me that these other companies are Planet, I guess, is part of Reliance. So there's.
And frankly, I'm at a little bit of a loss because we were unable to get all of the underlying policies in the course of this litigation. And so we only really dealt with the fact that we certainly know there's one policy, the underlying commercial general liability policy, that provided coverage. Therefore, we don't have a duty to defend or pay defense costs.
Except they're now asserting a gap.
Well,
that's what I mean. You may be waived or whatever, but that's nevertheless one that.
Well,
which
you
is
know,
a
and
gap,
that's,
which a gap to me is for workers' comp.
And workers' comp may provide coverage. It may not provide coverage. Mm-hmm. Even if it doesn't provide coverage, or it does provide coverage, or does not provide coverage, we still have the issue with the commercial general liability policy as well. There may be other policies that provide coverage. We weren't able to determine that. One of the arguments that was brought up with respect to insuring agreement number 2 is that even disregarding some of these other arguments, that once $2 million in defense costs is paid, that then American Home has to step in and pay anything after that. The absurdity of this argument becomes apparent when you consider what would happen if Reliance hadn't been insolvent. Basically, the result then, under what Premcor is arguing, is that Reliance would be paying that $2 million, and then both companies would have an equal obligation then to pay defense costs above $2 million. So you'd have some kind of double recovery that would be going on at that point. So insuring agreement number 2 does not avail Premcor any more than the ultimate net loss, the amount recoverable. And as far as the amount recoverable, clearly, although, as Judge Wood pointed out this morning, although amount recoverable has been held ambiguous in the context of certain policies, in the context of this policy, it's just not ambiguous. There are three, four separate instances where it's clear in this policy when there's an insolvency or a collectability issue with the underlying insurance that does not trigger a defense cost obligation by American Home at the umbrella level. There are no further questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Shores. You have 30 seconds, Ms. Alexander. We'll make that a straight minute.
First of all, the underlying lawsuits involved two fatalities in which the plaintiffs were arguing intentional conduct to get over the workers' compensation bar. I believe that's why the workers' compensation carrier did not cover. Second of all, I didn't get a chance to point out that American Home has conceded that at a minimum, Premcor is entitled to defense costs over $2 million. It hasn't attempted to defend the district court's decision to the contrary in that regard. Third, with respect to endorsement number 10, our reading is absolutely reasonable. If this court finds American Home's reading reasonable as well, it's ambiguous. An ambiguity on top of an ambiguity does not mean clarity. It means that it must be construed in favor of the insured, in favor of Premcor, in favor of coverage. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Alexander. Our thanks to both counsel, and the case will be taken under advisement.